Zedheads, welcome to our podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Lucy.
And I'm Derek.
Derek! And this is The Walking Dead Cast, episode 496.
And this episode, we're talking about how The Walking Dead comic ended in comparison with the show, which you might have heard ended recently. And yay, Derek's here!
Yay, welcome back, Derek.
Thanks, guys. Great to be back. It's been a little while.
So good to have you back for comic talk.
Yeah. How, have you been liking the end of The Walking Dead, and how do you feel about the finale?
Loving it. I really enjoyed the finale. Yeah, I must say it was great to be there each week watching along on the final season. Have got worries about the future of the show, as in the future of the spinoffs and stuff. But very particularly because, as you probably hear from my accent, for those of you who don't know me and from the Zedheads, I'm not in the US like Lucy, and I think we're going to have major problems getting spinoffs in the future. So I kind of needed a little bit more of a definitive end from the show because, nobody's picked up, Fear. Nobody picked up Tales of the Walking Dead over here, and nobody picked up, we had World Beyond, didn't we? Which we all released at one time.
Yeah. But
I feel like we're not going to get any other spinoffs.
No way. I think
isn't that crazy?
The Rick one, you got to get that.
I know, but the only reason we have the main show is because of the deal that they had with Fox when Disney bought them. I think we wouldn't have even gotten that.
You never got Tails, huh?
Never got Tails. Nope.
But I just think that's, my hunch is they're just going to not follow up on that, so they're not bothering.
Yeah.
We'll see, but I mean, are you all broken up about not getting Fear?
I stopped watching that and then realized that they had stopped sharing stopped putting out the show over here.
So you quit them before they quit you.
Exactly.
We broke up with them first.
Yeah.
Yes.
But overall, no, I really did enjoy the final season. I liked how it kind of circled back towards the end and had everybody getting major moments at the end of the show.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Did you have any standout moments?
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Oh, how many standout moments. I love all the people that survived. That was really good. I love that it was a farewell to the show as it was. But I guess the final episode with Rosita and her death, I think, was just such a great cherry on top for a major character. And the goodbye to her. I thought that was a fabulous way to close out her story.
I'm so impressed with how emotional they made that episode. Mm-hmm. I mean, like 90% of the listener feedback we got just was like, I cried. Yeah. And that's a good way to go out on a series, just to really pull at the heartstrings like that. It really made an impact.
Yeah, without a doubt.
It's cool. Well, I mean, if you're a longtime listener, then you know that Derek and Lucy used to do the comic talk segment a while back. So we're glad to have Derek back for a comic talk focused episode. We're going to be talking about how the series finale and maybe some of the episodes leading up to it compare and contrast with the final issues of the comic. But I also want to remind people that the three of us did a whole episode on the final issue of the comic book when it came out. It was a big surprise to everybody. It wasn't pre-announced. I think it was a triple size issue. And in that episode, we also interviewed the illustrator, Charlie Adlar. So it's a really good one to go back and check out if you're curious about more in-depth, just focus on the comic itself. And that was Walking Dead Cast episode 364, and it's in your feed if you'd like to go back and listen to that. But we might repeat some of the stuff we said then. I don't know. We'll find out.
Yeah, we'll do a comparison. We'll do a comic talk, comparison talk, and then we'll compare it to what...
What if we just... we do this episode next week, we'll review this episode
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We'll review that episode.
And then you're almost at 500. Yeah.
Yeah, then we'll get to 500.
Love it.
So, I mean, I just kind of wrote a bunch of notes on some of the issues leading up to the end. You know, I kind of wanted to touch on some of the things that we haven't fully addressed in our comic talk segments coming up to now. But I don't know about you guys. Does anybody just want to jump in and start talking?
I did the same. I've got mainly notes on the finale itself, but I also went back into issue 174, which is the Negan Maggie final confrontation.
Oh, and cool.
The final
Let's talk about
issue
that because I didn't go back to that one.
Hmm. Well, I did. The reason I did this, I don't know if you and Derek felt the same. Was I in the back of my head? It was kind of tingling that some of the dialogue from Maggie and Negan's scene in the finale of the show was taken from that issue of the comic. And issue 174 to me is one of the best issues of the comic. And for context, if you're listening to this, I'm going to assume that you don't mind spoilers. So
yeah, that's right. We're going to be spoiling the whole entire anything from the comic. And also while you're talking, I just want to mention it ended with 193. That was the final mm-hmm. one. But the reason Lucy's talking about 174 is I think that was Negan's last appearance.
It's his last full appearance in the comics. Yeah.
Which so is, he left.
You know,
yeah.
It was a good way to leave his storyline. So 174, what you have there is the culmination of Maggie and Negan's conflict. And I've spoken about this a lot in the show over the years because one of the things where I feel the show had to really do a sidestep was when Lauren Cohen left. And they tried to sort of hammer in this scene before Lauren Cohen left at the start of season 9.
Just in case she didn't come back.
But it didn't quite land in the same way. So in the comics, for context, Maggie hasn't gone away. She's been living in, I believe, the Hilltop community while Negan has been alive in Alexandria. And what you see in this issue is Maggie and her friend Dante, who is nothing like the Dante we were given in the show, find Negan. They're tracking him. Negan's been exiled from the main group in Alexandria, and Maggie goes to find where he's living to kill him. She goes with a gun. And as she goes to kill him, they have a kind of reckoning where Negan says he always thought this day would come. He's ready to die. And he kind of has a breakdown about his wife, Lucille, and sort of begs Maggie to kill him. Before that happens, though, there's kind of a very tense verbal confrontation. And what we see in the show finale is Maggie saying a lot of the same things, but in a much gentler context. And one of the bits that I pulled out of the comic, I've got a photograph of it here, is that she says to him, every time I try to picture Glenn's face, all I can see is him screaming my name with his skull bashed in and his eye hanging out. When I hear his voice screaming my name, garbled in agony, that's my memory of him. And with that, I see you smiling. And I think they must have come back to this issue for some of the inspiration. I feel like in the finale, they did the right thing not mentioning the eye because I think that would have upset everyone.
No,
that
didn't really fit the tone. Yeah.
Didn't fit the tone. But it was interesting to me to see that they end up in a kind of similar place in the show, but with perhaps less desperation on Negan's part and less anger on Maggie's part. Mm-hmm. But if you have a chance, I think you can read that episode of the comic without the context of what's come before it, because it's just a really interesting two-hander. And Maggie decides not to kill him. And as she's leaving, Negan is weeping on the doorstep and two walkers come and they're about to bite him. And she shoots them both so that he can't get the death that he wants. And I was thinking about that when we see her shoot zombie Hornsby and not giving Pamela the death she wants, as kind of a similar move on Maggie's part in the show.
And then she left and Negan was like, reverse psychology for the win.
Yeah, Negan was like, oh, hell yeah.
I know she doesn't like being told what to do, so just tell her to kill me and I'm safe.
And yeah, you don't see Negan ever again in the comics. It's only 19 issues, so it's not that long. But there's a hint of him in the final episode. We know that he's still living.
Mm-hmm. Carl goes over to his house, but he just wasn't home or something.
Yeah, he's within the universe of the world, but we don't see him in any way.
Right. Well, we also did get a one-shot after the end of the comic called Negan Lives.
We did.
That had a story that took place just after that, 174. Mm-hmm. And it was about him kind of being listless, and then he gets basically attacked by some people, and he ends up with a new partner named Lucy.
He does indeed.
And they decide to find his wife's bones and bury them properly because she never got a proper burial. So they just, mm-hmm. they did, Robert Kirkman did one more story after the end of Walking Dead, and that was it, just to kind of show that Negan has a new purpose in life or something.
Yeah.
That was done for charity as well, wasn't it?
I think it may have been. Yeah, yeah.
I think it was,
was it Comic Book Day or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah. One final return to the story. And that's kind of one of the things about the final issues of The Walking Dead. While it did end and there was closure in a way, it was always that you could return and tell stories about mm-hmm. those characters. People lived effectively, and there mm-hmm. was still the idea that there was a threat in the background of the zombies that still existed in the world. There could be other stories that could be told, and I think mm-hmm. that's why I'm not as perturbed by the end of the show, the way that it ended, not closing everything out completely, because it's kind of the same as the comic, right? Overall, yeah. as well. So
yeah,
kind of the way it ended.
You were saying you were happy to see which characters survived, and mm. I'm glad just because I like certain characters, but also there's that idea that one of them could show up in one of these spinoffs or something. I'd love to see Aaron. I keeps coming to mind for some reason. Like, it'd be awesome to see him show up in some other story at some point.
Yeah,
I'll tell you, absolutely. Reading the final issue made me all sad again that Jesus died, because in the final issue of the comic, Aaron and Jesus survives. Are like happy
they're
dudes
together
and happy
sailing and stuff. I don't know, they seem to have a nice life.
<They're>
It made me sad.
Yeah.
I was like, oh.
Well, let's get into I'm just gonna mention some things in the issues leading up to the end. Mercer at one point is talking with his soldiers about staging a coup and installing better leaders. So he kind of decided to do that much earlier than in the show, or without as much pressure on him. Mm-hmm. And Lance overheard him doing that, and Mercer ended up in jail. And then Laura, the savior, who's much different than Laura in the show, breaks him out. And then there's pandemonium, right? And Rick tries to get the Miltons to safety. He's actually trying to protect them. He's not sure. He's kind of struggling. He's not sure if he's on the right side, but he doesn't think they deserve to die. And then Mercer starts a coup and wants Rick to be the new leader, but Rick resists. And Mercer has Lance locked up. And then Maggie gets nervous that Rick has been gone at the Commonwealth too long, so she brings a bunch of armed people to the Commonwealth. And Milton thinks that Rick brought them to try to overthrow her, so there's the standoff, and he tells her men to attack them. But Rick talks him down. He wants to preserve the Commonwealth without bloodshed. He thinks it's flawed, but it's special. And then he gives a speech and tells people that Milton just wants power, and if they want something else, they should make it happen. And then Pamela ends up in a cell, but then Rick goes and lets her out of the cell because he thinks she's a non-issue now. So this is all the things that led up to Rick's death, which I wanted to get into more. But first, if there's any of what I just said that you guys feel like unpacking or anything.
I'd forgotten that Dwight's death was a really big catalyst in the Commonwealth storyline. So that was another big death we didn't get. Dwight makes a move on Pamela to kill her. And Rick kills Dwight in defense.
To save Pamela, yeah.
And that's something that wins him a lot of favor with the Miltons, and that's something that like hangs over Laura, who's a much bigger character in the comics. So that was something I'd forgotten about. And yeah, I feel like the Commonwealth was more bloodless for our group in the show. Like a lot more went on sort of politically than in terms of like people dying. And I think for me, I don't know about you, Derek, but like how did you feel when you saw Sebastian die? In the show, because that was a real
absolutely, it felt like we kind of wanted to have that happen in the comic because of what he did, the way that he died there, but yeah, it kind of felt like a bit of justification for what he did in the comic, but in the show he's almost not as bad because of the fact that in the comics, exactly as Jason was about to say, he's the one that kills our main character, Rick Grimes. So you kind of want a bit of payback for that, right?
I didn't like it. I still kind of don't like this little twerp. Mm-hmm. So yeah, what happened next is he breaks into Rick's place at night. And he's pissed because And it's more, actually the show helps really bring it home for me that Sebastian was used to being one of the privileged. And now because of this guy, Rick, his mother is persona non grata. She's lost her power, which means he's lost his power and wealth and everything too. So he's pissed. He breaks into Rick's place at night, shoots him in the chest. And then Carl finds him there the next day as a zombie and has to put him down, which is really sad. And they go to, you know, Carl goes to Pamela and she's, or no, she goes to him to make sure that he's not going to kill Sebastian. And Carl's like, well, what are you going to do then? And she goes, well, he'll spend the rest of his life behind bars for what he did. And so then Carl's like, okay, fine. And then he goes and talks to Sebastian and says, if you ever get out of here, I'm going to kill you. And so anyway, after everything that Rick has survived, it was hard for me to grapple with him being shot by this little twerp, as I said. I'm trying to I mean, you could think of it more like, well, sometimes in The Walking Dead, especially the comic, death is like it is in the real world. It just, you may get hit by a car. It's not, it doesn't always have to have meaning, you know? It's just like life can be taken away at any point randomly, and we have to live each day to the fullest because of that. But then if I want to try to make some meaning in the story for it, maybe it's that Rick was such a great survivor in the zombie apocalypse where you had to be ruthless and do the dark things to take care of the people that you want. But only when he got reached like something approximating what former civilization was like, did he get done in by just one of the dark sides of civilization, which is privilege and entitlements, you know.
Twerps.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Twerps,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But I do think the show had to change in a way that the comic didn't have to. I think, you know, let's just quickly call it out. The death of Glenn and the way that it happened in the show and how it was visualized on TV turned off half the audience, as we all know. We saw we saw what happened there. Which meant that these moments that we got in the comic books couldn't take place on the show. We couldn't have had a moment where Rick Grimes was shot, died, and Carl had to take him out. That wouldn't have been no viewer who had survived through what you'd seen on TV would have watched it, and nobody at AMC was going to allow them to do that on TV. So so I think we had a much more brutal experience in the show. There's some characters, and we'll talk about some of them a little bit in a moment, but some characters that get really brutal deaths because they're just drawings on a page in a way.
Well, what if they would have done the Governor Michonne stuff on the show?
Yeah. Oh,
I was always wondering
how
they're going to do that, and they pretty much just didn't. But the Governor, I mean, I hate to have even these words come out of my mouth, but brutally raped Michonne and kept her prisoner and tortured her. And it was awful. And then when Michonne had the upper hand, she went in and took a spoon and like scooped his eyeball out and was chopping off body parts and stuff. And the whole comic was that. And it was like, wow, I don't know.
It was
if I want
grim,
to be looking
man.
At this.
Yeah. I feel like so, Charlie Adler said that was the stuff that upset him the most was that edition. Like, I think like the other thing that for me, like, cause you kind of, you look at the finale and you look at the final issue of the comic and you think, right, how, not where did it go wrong, because I'm pretty happy with both, but like what were the big shifts that happened? And I think the other one that shouldn't be underestimated is losing Carl. I think losing Carl in season 8 was the big shift. That was, are you sure? I thought it was halfway through 8.
You're right. It's 8.
Yeah. We've got a trivia night coming up. I'm going to win. I think that was, for me, that was the point where I'm like, okay, we're going to move away from what the comic is offering us and maybe move to something else. But then when we got Judith, I was like, oh, maybe we're going back towards it a little bit. I don't know. So I was, I think I was taken aback that they didn't delve further into the future in the final episode. But as Jason and I've spoken about a lot, I can see why they didn't. And I think I'm glad they didn't. But I still have a lot of affection for that final issue of the comic and how it showed just more of a legacy, more of a long-term vision of like how things were going to be. And there were a couple of things in the final issue that I think were mirrored in the
in the show. Wait, before we get to that, I just want to give some context for how this happened. So first off, at the end of the issue where Rick died, Carl is really sad and saying he sacrificed so much to create a world where we can say goodbye. Andrea, she got to say goodbye to everyone, but he's just gone. What was it all for? Everything is better now, safer. The whole world is different because of him. But Carl is seems like he's ready to kill himself or something. And then at the in the letters page, which Walking Dead always had a great letters page with people writing in and Kirkman and the editor responding. And he Kirkman gives a long note here. I was going to read it, but it's really just a big fake out. Like I mentioned, issue 192 was Rick's death and 193 was the surprise ending of the series, which we did not know about after Rick's death. And so in this page and a half long note, Kirkman is just saying, you know, I know you, some of you guys are upset, but I've always said that no one is safe in this book, including Rick Grimes, but his impact and memory will live, will be alive in the book from here on out. And you'll just have to trust me that the book is still going to be like The Walking Dead after this. And then he goes on about how this is the last issue that's going to be inked by the inker Stefano Guadagnino, and Charlie Adlard is going to go back to inking his own work after this. So he's really just trying to make it feel like the book is going to have this long life after this. And he even
he doesn't say anything that's not true, but yes.
No, I know, absolutely. But one thing he did that wasn't true is he had Charlie Adlard draw three more covers for non-existent issues, 194, 95, 96, so they could be put in like previews magazines and stuff just to trick us into thinking that it was still going. And then, boom, the last issue came out, the triple size, and there's this big time jump. Do you know how long it is? Like
20 years.
They don't really tell you, but it's about 15 or 20 years. Because Carl has a child. He's together with
Sophia.
With Sophia, of course.
And they have this sweet marriage. And it's lovely. And that's right where you were just starting to talk, Lizzie. So
So in my little head, I was like, well, they're going to get Judith and Herschel to get married and they're just going to do the same thing, but it'll be Judith and Herschel talking about that stuff. But the more that season 9 went on, and none of this was bad, I enjoyed all of it. It just became apparent that that wasn't going to be the ending of the show, and I think that that was the right decision. And I think another character shift that you see in the final edition of the comic that I thought was really interesting is that Herschel's kind of a jerk. Like Herschel is Sebastian Milton. Like Herschel,
he's on his way to becoming Sebastian, I would say.
Absolutely. But he also has a really powerful he has a really powerful scene where he explains to Carl that like Herschel's whole thing in the comic is that he runs a sideshow of showing people The Walking Dead. So he collects walkers and shows them to audiences because walkers have become so rare now that it's a spectacle. And he and Carl have a huge conflict over this, and Carl ultimately wins. But Herschel says, you know, no one remembers my dad and they all hear worship your one, and this helps me feel closer to him. And it's just a really nicely played kind of beat. But I think with the scene that we got with Maggie and Negan, it hits the same kind of tribute to Glenn. And I'm kind of glad that cute little Herschel from the show didn't end up being a jackass, because that would have made me feel sad.
That's true. It made me feel sad in the comic. That Herschel did.
Absolutely. And kind of sad for Maggie that she would let her child grow up like that.
So let me just sort of summarize. So Carl's married to Sophia and they have a little girl named Andrea. Who, I mean, so Andrea in the comic was basically Sophia's adoptive mother. So she named her child after her. And the Commonwealth, is it still called the Commonwealth? I can't remember, but it stretches over a large part of the United States, and there's no zombies inside.
There's numbered Commonwealths. I'd forgotten that. There's Commonwealth One, and then there's like other ones. But yeah, it's still known as the Commonwealth overall.
And people go years without seeing any zombies, and they all see Rick's actions as having led to this. So he's like this historical icon. There's a statue of him.
The statue is quite funny.
What do you mean?
It's just he's quite like in the statue, yeah. And like Carl's like, oh, it really doesn't look like him, and I was like, yeah, he looks super mad. But yeah, there is a statue which is
and
very
missing
iconic.
His hand, which of course he was throughout most of the comic. Mm-hmm.
He looks like Aaron, to be honest. Like, yeah, when you look at
yeah,
it,
I
now.
Mean Aaron. Yeah, yeah. But the story, yeah, is Herschel going around showing Zed's like this old timey traveling sideshow, and one gets away and is on Carl's property, and he kills it, but then he gets in trouble because that's. Herschel's personal property, which I thought was a bit silly because I think it's like if a lion gets out of the zoo, you're not going to get in trouble for shooting the lion, I don't think.
No, exactly. You know? You shouldn't. I don't think
so. But he doesn't really get that much in trouble. He goes to court. They say that he has to find a zombie to replace that one, but instead he goes and kills Herschel's other zombies. And then he goes back to court, and this time it's presided over. They keep referring to Judge Hawthorne, what turns out to be Michonne. Who lets him off and outlaws showing Zed's for profit. And there's this whole theme of not forgetting what it took to get us this to this state where we can afford to let our guard down and feel safe and at peace, similar mm-hmm. to the show that good times can lead to complacency. But then, yeah, Herschel's what you just said. He's like, hey, I want to, you know, your father's an icon, but mine's barely remembered. But he also says that, hey, showing these zombies actually reminds people of what's out there and keeps them afraid. And I was like, oh, yeah. That's kind mm-hmm. of a good point, too, you know?
mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
So, I don't know. What else? I mean, would you guys say that the final issue is reflected in the show in many ways?
Yeah, I kind of think there are some big things. You know, the you guys have talked about Negan and the imprisonment of Negan instead of the killing of Negan being such a big thing for everybody that survived through Rick's time and then coming back to it at the end here where we have Pamela being locked up in prison and getting the punishment that Sebastian got in the comics for killing Rick. You know, these are all echoes of what was going on earlier on in the story to kind of that's the only way you can wrap up an ongoing story is to echo and say that the choices that were made earlier in that ongoing series were the right choices to make for the ongoing world. They may have mm-hmm. seemed harsh. They may have seemed really bad for some people. Some people wanted Negan to die when he died, but these decisions being reflected towards the end of the show, I think were really, really important, especially for that story. You know, I've said it, I've either shouted it at the podcast while listening to it or been on the podcast and said it. I can never remember which one it was, but you know, the idea of Negan's redemption over where people were coming at it from that angle that they felt we were trying to redeem Negan for so many years. That was never the case. It was never the case in the comic book. And, no. And here in the show, in this final episode, when he has his apology with Maggie, it is about accepting what he's done. And in the whole series, this idea of him being kept in prison rather than being killed is the idea of long-term imprisonment versus the death penalty, effectively. If they're dead, mm-hmm. they can't do anything. If you get long-term imprisonment, they have a chance to realize what they've done wrong and apologize for it, at least. If they're dead, they can do nothing more. And that's kind of the overarching idea of what happened with Negan. I love how that played out. I think you made a great point, Jason, that they couldn't do it earlier because they were keeping him on the show for as long as they were keeping him on the show. They were never going to let him walk off and disappear for the last season of the show. He's too important to it. So it may have felt a bit stretched out, but I think the payoff of that is the payoff from the comic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I should totally know this, but in Ireland or the UK, is there a death penalty?
No.
I think our last execution was like... I think our last execution over in the UK was like the 60s, I want to say.
It's, wow. It's not as long ago as I thought it was, I must admit.
Yeah. It's
ours
not
was
been
Tuesday,
years.
So.
Yeah.
There you go.
What can I say? We're a very, we're such a caring nation. Sorry, that sounded really sarcastic. Yeah. I mean,
it's interesting because I think,
back.
Like, the point you're making is so great, Derek, that a big I mean, you know, if you're going to end with the kind of story that you could actually come back to because so many people are still alive, then what is the tent pole that makes it feel like an ending? And it's that they've reached becoming civilized again. Yeah. You know, we lost civilization and now we have it back. And a big part of that is treating people more fairly and not being so brutal and savage, you know?
But as I say, it's also hitting those points that you hit along the way. This was a very long journey
to
and kind of underlining what was right in the past as well.
And I want that kind of leads into I hope this isn't too long, but the end of this final comic is Carl sitting on a, you know, he's fully adult, he's sitting on a rocking chair with his daughter Andrea on his lap reading a story to her. And so I'm going to read it. It's kind of kid language because it's for a little girl, but I think it's fits in with this really well. He says, did Sophia write this?
Sophia's written the book. Yeah.
And it says, "Do not fear, dear reader, for this may seem like a scary book at first, and your mommy or daddy may even read it in a scary voice. Shame on them. But this is not a scary story. This is a story about hope. One day, a long time ago, dead people decided they didn't want to be dead anymore. Nobody knows why. And don't be embarrassed. It scared everyone. Nobody knew what was happening or why, but life changed. Everyone was tested. That's why this time came to be called the trials. You've probably heard your parents talk about it. It was a scary time, and many good, strong people lost themselves along the way. They started to forget who they were. They even started to forget what was good and bad. They only worried about living. There was no time to follow the rules. Almost nobody brushed their teeth or went to sleep by their bedtime. A great darkness fell across the whole world. It made everyone sad. People didn't know if things would ever go back to normal. Most people were sure it never would, and they got sadder and meaner. When things were at their darkest, a man came along, someone who'd been hurt by the trials. But he didn't let it make him sad, not all the time at least, and we all know it's okay to be sad sometimes. Rick Grimes had an idea. He knew that if we stayed together and made friends instead of enemies, we could do anything, even remake the world. He made friends and lost friends as he moved across the country. He met people he thought would be friends, but they turned out to be bad. He sometimes had to hurt the bad people to protect his friends. And sometimes he shot at random strangers. No, I'm just kidding. That's on the sometimes he was scared that he was becoming a bad person, but he never did. And he taught other people how to not let the trials turn them into bad people. He even met bad people and turned them into friends. Rick traveled far and wide, always bringing his friends with him, and they made him stronger. They made him safe. And he taught people how to make friends and use them to make them stronger and safer. The trials made people so angry that some of them just wanted to fight. But Rick knew this was wrong. He showed them how to be friends instead. The trials were dangerous times, and even Rick didn't survive them. But he was able to show us the way. With his teachings, the trials ended, and life returned to normal. We even have ice cream again. People are happy instead of sad, and safe instead of scared, and nice instead of mean. All because someone was strong enough to do what was right. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, you're there and you're safe because of Rick Grimes. I mean, it feels a little propaganda-y, but
you can see why Herschel's a bit pissed, but yeah, it's lovely. Yeah. It's a lovely way to end the book.
Yeah, it really is. And obviously connected into Judith giving her voiceover throughout the episodes of the show. Mm-hmm. That's the connection to this storybook that's created at the end of the series. So I do really like that. I love that we did get the youngest character taking everybody through the past to kind of give them the lessons to learn for the future. I thought that was a beautiful idea to use it that way rather than just having Judith sitting right at the end telling the story. Having it throughout the series worked really well.
Good point. Did you fear for her life at all?
Kind of. I suppose weirdly, you know, we've mentioned the shooting of Rick Grimes by Sebastian. Really, the shooting of Pamela Milton of Judith is what echoes it in the last of the penultimate episode. Like, you're kind of going, they can't do that, can they? They can't kill our favorite character. They did it in the comic book, and they're finished after this. So would they have done that if they were at spin-offs? I can't imagine you'd do it that way. You know, she's too wrapped up in the love that we had for the characters that we've lost, like Carl and Rick. But I think, yeah, I think there were some little moments. And I know there's a little bit of suspension of disbelief in the final episode and how she got out of that without much medical attention. But that's fine.
She was even there in the first place.
Absolutely.
But I read, so he, Kirkman had another long note, of course, at the end of the very last issue. And a big part of it is that when he started writing this, he was only like 28 or something. He was a young guy. And that was back in like 2004, 2003. And he said that when he envisioned the ending of the book at that point, it was going to be bleak. There was going to be a statue of Rick Grimes, but then when the camera pulled back, it was going to be overrun with zombies and everyone was dead. And he said when he was younger, his story, he thought more bleakly like that. But at some point, fairly early on, and with Charlie Adlard's pushing, he decided, no, let's end on an upbeat note. And the show did the same thing. And I'm glad. Come on. We get to know all these people. You don't want it to just be all for nothing by the end.
Yeah.
No, I think it was the best call. And that's one of the reasons that the statue makes me laugh in the final issue is because of what it could have been. I don't know. I think it's funny because it's like, oh, he got his image, but what's around it is very different. And I find that quite hopeful in a way. And there were some things I think that... There were some parallels, some nice nods to the finale that I hadn't really appreciated. Nods to the final issue in the finale that I hadn't appreciated. So the first kill that we see in the comic in the final issue is a zombie being decapitated by Michonne's katana, only it's Carl holding the katana. And you see Michonne's final kill in the show, in the kind of weird Rashawn flash forward, flashback, is very similar the way that it's shot and the way that it's done. I don't know whether that's intentional, but it's cool. We spoke a little on the podcast about the Western Alliance and the railways and the expansion and the messengers, which was all awesome. Princess and Mercer in the comics, the only thing I would change is that in the comics they have a little dog. And I'm like, oh, I would have liked to see a little dog, but sadly that didn't come to pass. Miko and Magna are back together in the comics. Carl mentions, you read it out there, Jason, we have ice cream again. Ice cream was a huge symbol in the Commonwealth that we saw of like life being back to normal. And there's a really lovely panel in the comic with Carl and Lydia looking up at the sky and it's chock full of birds. And they talk about how... because human population has dwindled so much, the birds now kind of overtake the sky and block out the sun when they move. And they actually did this much earlier in the show. They did it at the start of season 9 with Rick and Michonne and Judith. But it's just a lovely image that I'd kind of forgotten about. We obviously got a lot of death teasers. We spoke about those, Jason, with Gabriel scaling the wall. Because he has a... I think we've circled this death on the show quite a lot. Do you want to describe the death?
We can finally say it, can't we?
I'm gonna
let Jason describe this, but I absolutely wanted to say this is the reason I wanted to come on Comic Talk, because we have mentioned this death so many times over the years. I know it's so frustrating for people who listen to Comic Talk and haven't read the comics. So Jason, take it away.
So this happened during the Whisper War, and I just think the description in the on the wiki page is so good. I'm just gonna read it.
Amazing.
As the militia takes position, ready to face the whispers, Gabriel climbs a nearby water tower to take patrol. He struggles to climb, but eventually makes it up. As he looks through the scope of his sniper rifle, he's shocked to see a large group of whispers approaching. Gabriel runs towards the ladder, pleading to the Lord for help. In his panic, he falls backwards off the ladder and tries to catch himself on a ring by using his foot, which snaps his ankle nearly clean off. Dangling upside down, he's met by a voice proclaiming, "I will save you." This voice is revealed to be Beta, who proceeds to slash Gabriel's stomach open, telling him that he should have whispered as he marched onward towards Alexandria. Gabriel is then devoured by walkers, stripping him nearly to the bone on the upper half of his body. And I had a convention in San Francisco, Walker Stalker, after that, and with Seth Gilliam on the panel, you know, and I was like, hey, did you see? And he goes, yes, I saw it.
It didn't have to be Gabriel, but there is a part of me that is sad that we didn't see that death because it's so iconic.
It's pretty great they kept having him see water towers and ladders and things, though.
Yeah, yeah. And like sliding on the pole. I was like, oh no, oh God, how horrible. But yeah, no, that's...
That is absolutely one of the deaths that I was talking about, where we couldn't have gotten that with a character on the TV show that we knew well. It had to be a red shirt. It had to be somebody that if it was going to be shown on the TV show, it would be someone that we haven't seen very
too
often.
Gruesome. Some,
just a really bad death.
100%.
It was stupid, but great, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think nobody ever finds him, right? Nobody ever knows what happened.
No one ever knows. They kind of mention, they're like, oh, we guess Gabriel must have died or something. But he's less, he doesn't have as many attachments in the comics. So he's not like with Rosita, he doesn't have a child. I mean, I'm not saying like, so they don't really care, but just like, it's one of those things where like after the war, they're kind of like, yeah, Gabriel never came back, huh?
Yeah, just a casualty of war.
Casualty of war.
And I suppose, you know, for the character of Gabriel in the show, his ending is so good, and you know it's almost iconic, because as you saw from all your feedback that you got, and everybody really made that connection with him being the one that locked his congregation in, and now him being the one that brought in the outsiders, you know, completely changed character for the end. And we didn't really have that character of Gabriel in the comics, right? He didn't really change to that point, so that was a big punishment for him.
And one of the things I really love about his character is when a new character comes on and people are like, I don't fucking like him, kill him off or her or whatever. I'm like, remember how we felt about Gabriel early on?
Yeah.
And then that sometimes might get people thinking. Usually they're just like, I don't care.
I could go on and on about like things the comic did better versus things the show did better. One thing I think the show did a lot better was Eugene and Rosita, because in the comics they are a couple. The whole surprise at Sadiq's baby is actually Rosita and Eugene are a couple at that point, and Eugene finds out that the baby is not his, and Rosita ends up being one of the heads on pikes in the Whisper War.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, and while that, like, it's a good storyline in the comics, I think what they did with the sort of nuance of their sort of Eugene's unrequited love and their friendship, I think it paid off beautifully. Like what you were saying, Derek, about things that pay off in the long term, I think that paid off so well in that final episode that I actually had a note for our finale podcast, Jason, was that Eugene and Rosita are just much nicer in the show, as their dynamic and the way that they interact. Really, really lovely.
I always have that feeling that, too, that they're survivors, because Abraham was kind of the linchpin of that group, and now he's gone, and so they're kind of left with each other. So I always think about Abraham when I see them together.
Yeah. And never a truer word spoken than when Eugene said, I wouldn't be alive if it wasn't for you. You're damn right. Eugene would not have made it very far at all.
Oh my God, not at all.
Yeah.
I think, and I think I wanted to give a shout out as well to just Lydia, who is very different in the comics and the show, but gets a similar ending. In the comics,
interesting
she's
much in both. I liked her in
interesting
the comic
in both. Yeah. I liked her in both. I think this ties into what you were saying, Derek and Jason, about what you can show in the series versus what you can do in the comic. Because in this comic, Lydia's essentially a victim of childhood sexual assault because of what happens to her with the Whisperers, and it gives her a, in the way that she's depicted and how she copes with it, it gives her a kind of harsher dimension, and her relationship with Carl is a bit more,
it's edgy,
nuanced and edgy than her relationship with Henry.
She licked
but
his eyeball, that's what I thought.
She licked his eyeball. She did indeed.
So
and
gruesome,
seeing, I love both. I love both Lydias. They both fit the environment that they're in, and I like that they got similar endings of kind of happiness and connecting the communities and working on the frontier.
That's an interesting one, isn't it? Because in comic books, that's kind of Carl's job. He's decided he's not going to live within society. Mm-hmm. He's going to be the one that connects communities, and they gave that to basically four people, three people in the show. They gave that to Lydia and Elijah and, of course, Daryl. That's basically Daryl has taken that Carl role on, which I thought was quite interesting to do, you know, and it's almost like Daryl and Carol have become Carl and Sophia, not as a couple, but they've been together so long. They have that moment where Daryl finally says, I love you to Carol, and she doesn't laugh at him, which is really nice. And that's a moment that you get in the comics with Carol and Sophia, who had been not really together early on in the comics, but they'd always grown up together. And
there was always the thought that maybe they would end up being together. So it was nice to see them together at the end.
Yeah, it's a bit of a bait and switch because the last time we see Carl as a teenager, he's with Lydia still. Yeah. And then you kind of... I always want to know what happened in those intervening years because Lydia's still a little hung up on him or teases him a bit. And,
She tried to get with him at the end.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But that's what happens. None of us are with our teenage lovers, flames.
No, whatever. It's true. It's very true. I was going to ask you both if there was one thing that you didn't see in the show from the comics that you would have liked to, what was it? I mean, I know we've said Gabriel's
Carl.
Death.
Yep.
Carl.
Carl alive.
Yeah, Carl.
Yeah. I think so one. Too. But Kaylee Fleming was such a gift. And I think she was a huge part of why seasons 9 through 11 worked so well, was they just absolutely knocked it out of the park. But the resonance of having, I sometimes think that if Carl hadn't died, Rick might not have left in the main show. Like, I don't know. That's just my speculation there. But
I wonder, my instinct is that even if Carl had survived, that Judith could have been just as great on the show with him there too. I don't think necessarily, because he was getting older, so she wasn't necessarily like taking a spot that he vacated. I mean, it did kind of feel that way, but I would be interested to see what it would have been like with him there too.
Mm. Yeah. You kind of feel like he could have grown into a more of a father figure role and, you know, taking care of her a bit more.
Or maybe she would have helped him out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Carl stay in the house coming from Judith.
A few other things. We find out Maggie's president. And it sort of suggested that she took over the Commonwealth right after Rick died, because they said she was so busy right after that. In the comic, yeah. And now she's president of this bigger, larger government in the United States.
The description of her really is that she rules fairly but strictly. Like, there are strict rules that you must follow to be in the Commonwealth, and that's truly Maggie's character in the comic book. She's very good at making sure everybody follows those rules. Yeah.
Yeah, you can feel that the law is important.
Mm-hmm. Maggie differs, actually. That's something I hadn't thought about in a while. But yeah, in the show, they planted the seeds really early with Deanna and Georgie that Maggie was going to learn about leadership and go off and do these things. But then when she came back from the Lauren Cohen hiatus, Maggie and Herschel were much more like hardened than I think they are in the comics. Because Herschel's on the verge of becoming Sebastian Milton, and Maggie's had a much more kind of political power to her. I think they hint at the fact that Maggie might be making some decisions in the finale episode, but it's not as obvious. And I think I prefer show Maggie in that sense. But you know, both are good.
In the show, it feels like the societies are still very separate. And in the comic, it's one united government, it seems like, you know, with Maggie as president.
Absolutely. I know we've seen World Beyond. We've seen that there's a wider world that we haven't even explored at all within The Walking Dead. So you couldn't really bring all that together with a time jump. I think that would have really freaked out a lot of fans who are watching the show.
And that's also a function of only going forward a year instead of a longer period of time.
Absolutely.
And then I just want, so some people, I may have missed some, but that are still alive in the comic by the end of it: Carl, Sophia, Michonne, Maggie, Earl, Jesus and Aaron, who you said, Lydia, Eugene, but not Stephanie, who's Max in the show.
Stephanie has recently passed away, I think.
And Laura's still alive. And I don't know, there's probably more people, but I didn't notice any mention Negan. Of anyone else who had passed. Negan's still alive.
No.
That's kind of shocking when you think about, you know, the Heads on Spikes you mentioned already. You know, Rosita was gone, and she has such a big moment at the end of the series.
Ezekiel
was gone, and he becomes a leader of the Commonwealth at the end of the show. Like, that's quite a big a big journey for him, isn't it?
I was so sure he was going to die, and one of the reasons I thought was, I think I said, gosh, people can check the archive for this, but I'm pretty sure I said right at the start of this kind of season that I was, I assumed that Ezekiel might take Rick's place as being the one who got shot by Sebastian Milton. How wrong I was, and I'm glad I was wrong. Yep. But yeah, that was my theory up the wazoo.
I just assumed it was Aaron. I always thought it was Aaron that was going to take that on, because We talked about it before. He took on such a look of Rick from the comic books.
Yeah,
he never
hand,
got the storylines.
Everything.
Yeah. I don't understand why he never got the storylines, the ones that you would have given to traditional Rick. They're not Daryl's storylines. They're the storylines of someone that's trying to bring the community much more together rather than the fighter. Like, you know, Rick almost retires throughout that last arc of the comic book after the Whisperer War, and none of the rest of the characters really do that. And you kind of feel that would be a great place for Aaron to be the person that's bringing people together. And then I totally thought that's what was going to happen in the penultimate episode of the show, that would be Aaron if he had had that arc beforehand, because it would have been a big loss for the show. I'm so glad he's not dead. But
I know.
Me too. Yeah. I mean, I'm a little like, it's so hard to juggle all these characters, and they really gave Gabriel a great moment, and Rosita just got the best of the finale, I feel like. And Ezekiel, you know, everybody got their moments. Aaron, his whole thing in the end was just forging this friendship with Lydia and helping support her. And it was great, but it doesn't feel like, if you really wanted a good capper for Aaron, it seems like it could have been more, you know?
It feels like a Lydia story rather than an Aaron story.
Yeah, kind of,
And given how long he's been around, you know, his whole job was to bring communities together, to bring new people into communities. You know, he would have been perfect there as the final, as the Rick of the show, wouldn't he? I think
I would have loved to be in the writers' room when they were discussing who was going to go and who wasn't. Like, I just would love to hear the reasons and the kind of things that were suggested. I'm sure there were bad days where they were probably like, do you know what, let's just kill all of them, let's just explode everything and see.
Maybe
what
they
happens.
Have a dartboard. Doink. Oh.
That's an interesting one as well, you know, just to circle back on that, a kind of an echo that they did, because, you know, they never really knew when the show was going to end, you know. You can't with a show that goes on this many series, so they have taken a number of the things that happened in the end or to the last couple of seasons. They have taken those from the comic book, and they've done them before. You know, you guys talked about it definitely with the death of Carl and how he had a few days to say goodbye to everybody. And they did the same thing again here with Rosita, the finale. It worked really well in the finale, worked pretty well for Carl. But that's Andrea's ending in the comic books. Andrea been there for such a long time throughout the comic books that she got that final goodbye. You've mentioned it in when you were talking about the comic book ending, where Carl says, my dad died, and he didn't get a goodbye at all. Andrea did. I like that they gave that to Rosita. It was important for the finale, but I kind of wonder whether they gave it to Carl because they thought they'd never get to that point at the end of the season, when Carl had a moment to say for everybody saying goodbye to him. I wonder if they went, well, we kind of can do this again now. We're a couple of seasons on. It's another big character. We can do that goodbye moment for another major character.
So. Yeah. To me, I don't know why, but Rosita, so in the comics, Andrea's on horseback and gets bitten, and then she's in her deathbed, and there's a line of people coming in to say goodbye to her. Negan's one of them. I remember that was one of the most entertaining ones for some reason. I have to go back and look, but
it was the equivalent of like, we'd have hit that. You always thought you were sexy. I was like, oh my god,
great. Anyway, where was I going with that? So yeah, for some reason the Rosita, maybe just because she was in her bed, but it was just the vibe of it. It felt more like that to me than the Carl one. But you're totally right. Like, because Carl, it seemed like it took him a couple months to die. It was like a day. Anyway,
it was at least 3 weeks.
Yeah. And we should also absolutely say comic book Andrea is very different from show Andrea. She was such a great character in the comics. One of my favorite characters by the end. The end of the show.
She's essentially
my favorite.
Yeah.
In the comics or in the show? Both.
Out of respect to Laurie Holden, I won't answer that.
Yeah.
It was
interesting seeing recently that Frank Darabont absolutely had her arc planned out just like the comic books. He wanted to give Laurie Holden that storyline. That's why he brought her over from the movies he'd worked with her on. So he was really disappointed that because of everything that went on behind the scenes and is still going on behind the scenes, that they lost a lot of those actors and characters way earlier than they would have had he been involved.
Yeah. There's still court battles about how much AMC owes who. I think Kirkman stills, and we reported on that a lot early on, but I don't know, I just kind of lost interest, but I should probably go back and figure out where that all stands.
It's still ongoing.
I'm sad that all went down, but I have to say, I really do love Rick and Michonne together. And looking back at the comics now, I'm like, there's not really a reason why they wouldn't be. So I'm glad that it gave the opportunity for that to happen. But I do enjoy Andrea very much in the comics, and it was sad to see that kind of big diversion there from what could have been and what ended up being. But, you know, sometimes opportunity knocks, eh?
A big part of, I mean, that's one thing that's really impressive with the show is when there's a difference, they often do take, they don't try to force it into back into the comic. They, like with Ezekiel being the leader of the Commonwealth, I think that totally makes sense, and they have him alive, so go for it. But one of the things about Andrea in the comic is she was young, and she, you know, had a relationship with Dale, who was much older, and much older. And I liked that because, not because I'm an older guy, because it's because I liked exploring the idea that in the zombie apocalypse, you could sort of question, like, do we have to stick with what everyone considers socially acceptable. I mean, she wasn't young. She was like, you know, what was she, 20 years old, 25?
She was legal. She was definitely in her early to mid-20s.
But, you know, just sort of, that was a theme in the comic is like, do we need to worry about what the rules of society were before? And that was a great relationship. But then with Laurie Holden, she's a little older, so it didn't really stand out, her age difference from Dale, that much. And they didn't even end up getting together anyway.
Yeah. I remember the nods, though. I remember there were nods to it, in the show, where you kind of go, they're quite close together, aren't they? But yeah, and to be clear, Darabont was pointing out that he was talking about the Laurie and Dale relationship. As far as I could tell from the interview, and it's a really recent interview, he never read beyond when he left the show. Why would you? He wouldn't continue on with the comic books after the experience he had with AMC. So he says, I would never have put Andrea and Rick together, even though that's how the comic books went. He didn't feel that was the right relationship for Andrea. He loved the idea of her and Dale together. But that's because he didn't read on. So.
Yeah, and I mean, in the comics, Dale got what ended up being Bob's death, where he was eaten by the cannibals and then said, "You're eating tainted meat."
Yep.
Oh yeah,
that was Dale.
That's right. Yes, in the comics it was Dale, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, and Bob, man, wee Bob.
I miss Bob. Okay, I think does anyone have anything else you feel like you haven't pointed out that you want to talk about?
No, I think I'm good. I think to just put that fine point on it, as you guys were mentioning last week, you said you were going to talk about just that, how you weren't disappointed with the ending not closing everything out, because that's not really how the comic book did it. I know Kirkman has finished the book and then he did the one Negan story afterwards, but I don't think he closed it out that you could never come back and write a story during the period of the time jump or for any of the characters afterwards. There's certainly characters you could have jumped off on. We get a lot of characters. You get, you know, a couple of comic book panels and that's their whole story, that to tell you where they are now, but it doesn't mean that we couldn't have continued on, had spin-offs from the comics in future. I think it is ended that way, so you tell the story of the Grimes family and how they close out the book, but I think they could still have had more spin-offs had Robert Kirkman wanted to do that.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, that Angela Kang did not know that Walking Dead was going to be ending with season 11 when they started writing season 11, and Kirkman at some point said, yeah, I left a lot of seeds in that last comic for what could have happened in the intervening years to maybe help guide the show. And that's what they intended on doing, is just continuing on after the Commonwealth story, but maybe using some of the things that, you know, that last issue hinted at. So yeah, maybe they'll put some of that in the spinoffs or something.
Yeah. I just think it's, what I would say is it was incredible that we had both and that they were both satisfying in different ways. And one of the things I really appreciated about the Kang era, as we'll probably refer to it, is that they...
I think that's a Marvel thing now, isn't it?
Like the Kang. I mean, most likely. Was that they got the spirit of the comic in a way that I think we were drifting away from in 7 and 8. I think the Negan stuff in the show when he was introduced landed so tonally awkwardly with what the audience wanted and expected, and it was a big, big struggle for the show. And I think one of the things that got it back on track was taking bits and pieces from the comic where it worked and sitting and fitting in with the tone with it a bit more. And that is something that really made a difference to me as a reader and a watcher and a podcaster. So yeah, just how lucky we were to do that, and how lucky the three of us were to chat with Charlie Adlard when it all ended, because mm-hmm. what a way to go. Absolutely. You know, we were lucky. Yeah.
And I mean, I couldn't agree more. The Walking Dead, I've been a comic collector since I was in the fourth grade, and I think The Walking Dead is my favorite comic ever. And I just love it so much. And of course, you guys know how much I love the show. And it's so great that we had both and that they were so great. And also that Robert Kirkman, this guy who started this comic in his 20s, became one of the writers on the show. You know, not only did he sell his story to AMC, but he got to take part in how it was shaped. And he very deliberately, because he loves to shock us, he would steer things so you thought it was going towards the comic, but then psych us out. And so it was even more rewarding as a comic reader to just kind of try to guess when he was going to go towards it and away from it. It's just so much fun how they played with each other, the two different forms of the story.
Absolutely.
I will pay any listener who wants to do a soundbite of Jason saying I couldn't agree more, and I'll have it as my ringtone forever. Oh, and I'll be like, Jason agreed with me. I'd still like it.
Derek, you just made me realize that for years I've missed the opportunity of referring to Angela Kang as Kang the Conqueror. Dang it.
There you go. I am right at the end. You got it.
That's
love
amazing.
Kang the Conqueror. All right. Well, let's take a little break, but there's a bit more to come, so stay with us.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world.
Obvious threat to untold numbers of citizens.
The people it kills get up and kill.
Are they slow moving, Chief?
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
This is a Walking Dead cast news update.
So per Variety, the finale was the most watched episode of anything ever on AMC Plus, AMC streaming service.
Wow.
They didn't say numbers. I don't know how they know that.
Most watched numbers, anything but ever. Most. Big. Okay.
But it doesn't surprise me no. that would be. Did say on regular AMC it had 3.1 million viewers, was the number two cable drama among like 18 to 54 year olds. And I don't know what the number one was, but anyway, seems like it did all right.
And you'd expect that. There's a lot of anticipation for it. It's up a bit. I think I saw the number. It's something like it's up 20% on the rest of the season. So all loads of people tuning in that didn't even watch the rest of the season just to get that final fix of Walking Dead.
I mean, just at our finale screening, I know of at least five or six people who dropped off years ago but came to the finale to show support.
Yeah.
They said it was good.
There you go.
Entertainment Weekly talked with Angela Kang about some of the ways that the show was thought about going, like that it was almost Mercer or Carol or Maggie as the leader of the Commonwealth. She says it changed a lot through the season. We talked about maybe Mercer. We talked maybe Carol, maybe Maggie. At the end of the day, we settled on Ezekiel because it felt like Ezekiel's inherently a leader and has survived so much. And he's a very, very community focused type of leader. The kingdom was really the most joyful of all the communities, and they were strong and they were really good at being collaborative with other communities around them. Felt like Ezekiel went on a journey where he wanted to not do that anymore, but it really felt like he's somebody that at the end of the day is always going to find himself trying to help other people. And that felt like the right kind of leader to go forward. And I like that Ezekiel and Mercer, who were at such odds when they started, actually kind of wound up working together. But I kind of thought maybe Mercer needs one civilian step before he becomes a full leader. You know what I mean? Because he's been a military guy. So I think he actually probably had to be pushed to even run to be lieutenant governor. I think he's like, I don't think that's my path, man. I'm a soldier. And so I think he needed to get his feet wet in the government before he does more. Makes sense, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. I love that.
He needs sunshine as well. I need someone to keep him on the up and up, I think, and Ezekiel is good for that.
Good compliment. Absolutely.
And he's got the cheerleader in Princess.
Yeah.
Woo! Yeah.
Love them.
It says Carol was originally going to ride off with Daryl at the end.
Oh, okay.
She said, so the change with Melissa not going into the spinoff happened pretty late in the game, so we'd always planned that the two of them were going to ride off together. In the original version, they would have gone on the bike and pointed west and then would have gotten sidetracked. And then when we were running the finale, we were like, okay, let's reconceive how they end. So it becomes he rides off and she's there to support him because there's no anger or anything between them about it. It's just he's going off on a mission and she has a different mission right now. My co-writers and I, we had a different version of the Daryl Carroll scene on the bench that was a little lighter in some places, but still got to a similar sort of I love yous and things like that. But Norman and Melissa wish was to just keep it really, really simple and emotional. So I kind of rewrote it accordingly, and I think they did an amazing job with it. So that's how it all came about. It's all part of a collaboration, and we work on it. So they're like, we don't want to do this. Yeah. Maybe there was a lot of jokes in there or something. That's what it sounds like. But I liked how it ended up.
Definitely. Yeah.
Me too.
Entertainment Weekly interviewed Norman Reedus and asked him how his spinoff is going. He said, we're 3 weeks done. Got 3 weeks in the can. It's fucking great. Everybody that's involved in it is really excited about what we're doing. It's so epic in scale. And the tone is so good and different and moody. There's history in the story. There's history in the walls around us. History in the sound of it all. It's a very different feel. It has the stuff that you want from the show, but it's just picked up and put in a whole other dimension.
And did he say all that in French?
Well, they asked him what it's like to work to film in Europe. He said, it's weird as shit, but that's the story. People are speaking French around me, and part of my story is me trying to figure out, is this good or is this bad? Are we about to get into a fight or are we friends right now? I'm trying to read lips with the language that I don't understand, and I'm reading body language, I'm reading tone, I'm reading all sorts of things, and it's confusing, and I'm figuring it out. I figure out how to get out of it and how do I get to the next step. It's all part of the story. So is it weird? Yeah, it's weird, but that's the show we're making. So it's working really well. Anyway, I wonder how they're going to do that. If the idea is Daryl can't understand French. So are they going to have, they're not going to have the subtitles. So we know what they're talking about, but if you speak French, then you will know.
Oh, wow.
Is that how you think they're going to do it?
Yeah, I think you've got your co-host for covering that show now. I guess Emily Rochette would be yep. perfect as your co-host, yeah. Right? She can explain the French parts, and you can do the English parts. I wonder about that. You know, I have a theory that the reason why we're having lots of shows that have people speaking in their original language and subtitles is because so many people look at their phones while watching TV shows, that this is a way to encourage them to always look at the screen and see what's actually going on.
Interesting.
Because then you're really taking it in because you're trying to read the subtitles of what's going on in the episodes.
That's really funny.
On Lost, they had Jin and Sun speaking Korean a lot. And I listened to the official podcast with Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse, and I think they said they were kind of nervous about that at first, but people really took to it, you know, because for a long time there was this prevailing notion among Hollywood executives that subtitles people wouldn't put up with it or something. But I think, yeah, they do it more now, which I'm glad.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It makes so much sense, doesn't it? And if you're going to do it the way they're doing it with the spinoff there, with as Reedus is saying, if you're going to make it a real point that he's trying to deal with, you know, living in a place where he doesn't understand the language, then it makes so much more sense that they wouldn't be speaking English to us, the audience, and he's hearing French. That would be a really weird way to do it. So I like that.
Yeah.
I'd like it if they just went really like old French cinema, like black and white, and all sort of, you know, long gazes into the distance, and you know, My Dinner with Andre or something like that. You know?
And Daryl's wearing like a mime outfit.
Yeah. And it's just like lots of really kind of cryptic phrases, like, I feel much ennui and things like that, you know.
And the zombies look all like distraught and faraway gaze in their eyes.
Absolutely.
So they talked with Jeffrey Dean Morgan, and he's saying, you know, that it's been close to Negan apologizing for a while now, and it's basically, you know, it's like about time. But I like this part. He says, Lauren Cohen and I had a lot of fun working together. We very much enjoy each other's company. It's hard for us and fun for us at the same time that we get to hate each other on screen and off screen. We hug each other. We've come a long way in 6 years. When I first started the show, Lauren didn't want to make eye contact with me. So here we are. But it was fun. It was great that that scene was there with Maggie. And I think it was important. I think Angela Kang knew that scene needed to be there. Scott Gimple knew it needed to be there. Gives us the opportunity for the story to continue.
Hmm.
And then they asked about, you know, Maggie gives her talk to Negan about forgiving, but having trouble forgetting. And they said, what was so interesting is that in the last 5 seasons that have led up to this, Negan has been the biggest chatty Cathy ever. And he's completely silent in that entire scene. What was that like for you and for him to just sit there and take that all in? He says, I remember listening to it and thinking, oh, I could respond to this. I can very much think in Negan's brain. I can hop into Negan's brain and know exactly where and what is going to trigger him to say something a little bit snarky, just a little bit, just enough to give a little poke. I remember listening to the rehearsals of her doing it and going, oh man, I mean, she was great, but I was still in my head thinking, fuck, Negan would say something here. It doesn't matter if he's understanding and being nice. He would still have a quip of some sort, even if it's with just a sense of humor in it. And I didn't get a chance to, which is good. Negan needed to shut up. It's not the first time over the years I've said to Scott and Angela, he needs to shut up. And he finally did. It was good. And it was time for him to listen and shut up. That being said, still in my head, the wheels are turning and I'm like, oh, there's a one-liner in there somewhere.
Don't go with your instincts.
Stop it, Jeffrey.
It's funny. Like, as an actor, I could see you got two voices in your head, you know? You got Negan and Jeffrey.
Yeah.
Shut up. No, you've got to say something.
He's been playing the character for such a long time. He's probably quite used to just responding in that voice. You know?
Yeah.
So, I'm glad he didn't listen to that because it's such a great scene. And,
yes.
I think rounds out the character and Negan so well. Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice to have one scene where you didn't just want to punch him in the face.
Absolutely.
All right. That's it for the news. Let's move on to listener moans, groans, and grunts. How about Lucy read the short one and Derek can read the longer one?
Excellent. We do like to torture our guests. Ha ha ha. John Park says, love the podcast. Thank you. One quibble. When you play the news section soundbite, I have no idea what the clip says. Too hard to hear. That's it. Great, great show. Can't wait for more. Aw, John. Thanks.
I don't even know what it said. Let's listen to it again. Here goes.
Obvious threat to untold numbers of citizens.
The people he kills get up and kill.
Are they slow moving, Chief?
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
This is a Walking Dead cast news update.
So
obvious threat to all number of citizens.
The bit I've never heard is the people he kills get up and
kill.
What did kill? Okay, yeah. And then it cuts.
Obvious threat to untold numbers
obvious
of citizens.
Threat to untold numbers of
the people it kills get up and kill.
The people it kills
are they slow
get
moving,
up
Chief?
And kill.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
Are they
up.
Slow moving, Chief?
This
yeah,
is a Walking Dead cast news update.
That's fascinating. That it's been played now for 700 episodes, and you're getting an email saying that people don't. It's being played too fast because it's directly from Night of the Living Dead, right? That's where
yeah.
it's from.
Yeah, I think yeah. those are all Night of the Living Dead clips.
But I think everybody thinks of it as the Walking Dead cast. Absolutely loved at the live show. Everybody shouting that out back at you while it was
too.
Being played. It was fantastic because it goes through my head every single time. Dead Chief. They're all messed up. It's like fantastic.
Yeah, it was so great. I was just trying to think of something fun to put in there, and I was like, oh, I'll just play some of the sound clips without realizing that it was perfect because people were shouting out the other stuff too. You know, the attention shoppers and 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and all that.
I met attention shoppers. I met RJ. That was weird. I was like, I've been listening to your voice for like 10 years and I've now meeting you in person. This is very strange.
I love it.
Very weird.
What did he say?
He didn't say
hug,
it.
Right?
Sadly, yeah. Just a hug and a nice dinner. But, you know.
He's super sweet.
He's lovely.
Say attention Lucy now?
Yeah, sadly not. I should have gotten to. I could have had all the new ringtones.
He probably doesn't even remember doing that. He's never seen an episode of The Walking Dead, as far as I know.
There you go. Was that the last time we'll ever have the news sting? Are we changing it for the cast of us?
I will probably just keep it.
Yeah.
Just keep it.
I haven't figured it out yet.
I'm all for continuity. Keep it going.
Hell yeah.
Good stuff. Thanks, John, for your email. I've got an email from Huva in Jerusalem, who says, I wanted to send something in for Comic Talk. So here goes. The minute the finale ended, I found myself going back to read the entire Commonwealth section of the comics. One thing that really stood out for me was Robert Kirkman's final letter and the regret he had for killing off Rick. In quotes, to be honest, it seemed like a really good idea at the time, but now that we're here and the series is over, I'm having second thoughts. Not so much so that I'm changing course. That would kind of be impossible to do anyway, but it's possible, as much as I hate to admit it, that I'm genuinely feeling a sense of regret over this whole crazy plan. I love that quote from Kirkman. I love that he takes some kind of responsibility for that.
I think he's not just talking about killing Rick, though, but just ending the comic suddenly or at all.
Yeah. That's true. Uva continues, I know many of us were hoping for and anticipating a gory ending with more character deaths, but I thought it was really beautiful that the show kind of washed away Kirkman's regrets, in my mind at least. Another difference, of course, in the character base, to be clear. I love Rick and was devastated when Andrew Lincoln left the show, but in the comic, he's practically Superman, and the ending is all about how he single-handedly saves the day, leads way to a fair civilization, and what a hero he was. The time jump was cute, but it didn't give the wrap-up I wanted for so many beloved characters. I was happy that the show chose the route that they did. Last thing, I also really liked the one-year time jump. Even in the comic, I thought the 20-year time jump was too much and left me confused about who was who. I'm glad the show kept it more tangible and left opportunities to explore the universe more. Thanks again for all you guys do. I'll definitely be sticking around for coverage of the spin-offs, and since I deeply regret finding you so late, but I'm super excited to start The Last of Us with you guys from the beginning. I hope you'll do more podcasts gearing up for the show, since I know so little about it. What I do know is I'm on for the ride. Sorry for the long email, Ahuva. Thanks, Ahuva.
That's nice.
That's lovely.
Yeah, we decided, since we're so close to 500, number 500, that we're going to sneak in a couple episodes to get to where 500 will be the first episode of The Last of Us. So Last of Us pilot will come out, and then we'll have it. Episode 500 talking about that. So that means that 499 is going to be our introduction to The Last of Us. We're only planning one introductory episode, but it'll be a good one. So look for that coming out.
Fantastic. So looking forward to that. And we get it one day after the US get it. We'll not be behind. I think it's even being shown, like The Walking Dead was. It's even being shown at 2 o'clock in the morning to align with the US. So
that's so brilliant. Cool.
Yeah. So happy about that. Absolutely. Last of Us. Okay, and we have one call from our good friend Helen from Yorkshire.
Yay!
Hello, it's Helen from Yorkshire, England, living in a very cold Scotland.
Woohoo!
It's 2 weeks after the weekend in San Francisco, which was amazing. I couldn't believe I booked it. I couldn't believe I was going, and now I can't believe it's over.
I know.
So a bit of feedback on the last episode of The Walking Dead. Although I don't have a full sense of it being the last episode, because essentially the characters are going to come back into our lives and the various spin-offs. But I enjoyed the finale. I thought Rosita played it really well. And I'm not a mum, but to see her lying with her baby and knowing that she was leaving was just heartbreaking. I wish that, and I knew this wasn't going to happen because of the way the story was going, but I wish we could have seen Rick reunited with Maggie, Carol, Judith, and Daryl. A little reignition of the bromance would have been amazing. But it was great. And I've now seen and heard about the alternate ending with the young adult versions of Judith and so on. And I'd kind of like to see that too. It was amazing to watch it with a group of like-minded people to share the joy and the gasps and the shocks. And all of that. So thank you. Thanks to everybody that was involved with organising that weekend. Jason, Lucy, Rima, Karen, and all the other other people. It was great to meet lots of the Zed heads. Okay, Merry Christmas. It is December. I hope I'm not too late for the feedback show. Thank you. Bye.
Oh, Helen.
Great to hear from her.
Yeah, so sweet. And I'm so jealous, of course. I didn't even mention that up front. I'm so jealous that you guys all got to meet up together. It would have been fantastic to be together with you guys. I went over the top and have been on way too many late night call-in shows amongst the Zed Heads group just to experience some of the love that you guys got to see in person. But that meant be staying up till 3 or 4 in the morning my time to just dial in to say hello to people.
We will meet again.
Well, if I could have just teleported a handful of people over, you would have been at the top of the list, Derek.
We missed you there. I think he would have swapped me, Derek. I think he would have been like, you know, just give your ticket to Derek. It'll be fine.
Derek and Peter.
Derek and Peter, best weekend ever.
I wanted to play that call from Helen, even though she was too late for the call-in show, because that's one of my regrets about the weekend, that I didn't get to spend a little more time with Helen. And also when I was giving out the pop figures that Mark sent in to people who'd traveled the furthest, you know, we got to Australia and some from the Philippines, which actually isn't further than the UK. I wish I would have given one to Helen because she came all the way from the UK. I'm kind of bummed about that. Sorry, Helen.
Gonna have to come back.
At least you'll have to go and drop it up to her door.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, she lives really near my mom, so I think we're going to be hanging out soon anyway. So yeah, send anything my way and I'll try and get it to her.
Nice. All right, that's our show, episode 496. Thanks so much, as always, for listening, everyone. Thank you, Derek, for coming on. It's a pleasure to have you.
Jason, Lucy, I want to say a huge thank you to you guys for this many years together and the amount of times I've been asked on the show. That's been fantastic. A huge thank you, obviously, to Jason for starting out the show and starting out Comic Book Talk, of course, because he didn't have anybody to do it with him to begin with on the show. Huge thank you to Jaden, I think, who was the first host of Comic Book Talk, and to Mr. Blog and Gracie, who took it on afterwards, and then did a little handover to us, who took on the final Comic Book Talk. And I guess this is the final Comic Book Talk, because all the spin-offs are not really based on the Walking Dead comics, they're based on the characters from the TV show. So I'm so glad to be able to be here for the final Comic Book Talk as well.
I know.
One more time. Are you all out of tears? Yes.
I kind of wonder if Kirkman will write some more at some point. It's a possibility, but we can't count on that. So
I guess if he doesn't get the money from AMC that he hopes that he will get, he might quit and publish another comic book or two.
Oh, everything you said, Derek, everything you said, that was brilliant. Yeah, 100%.
Thanks, Derek. And one of my favorite episodes was the one that you two did together. I think I was in Europe and just handed it over to you guys, and then I got to listen as a fan, and that was really fun.
It's the Celtic charm.
If you guys want to write in and leave us a message, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com.
And while you're there, be sure to check out our other shows, because they do exist. There are many, and they're all brilliant.
Right now, we're actually we're kind of taking a little breather for the holidays, but we have Midnight Club on Strange Indeed, which is almost about to wrap up, and we have Dead to Me, the one with Linda Cardellini and Christina Applegate. It's such a great show. But there is a bunch of stuff coming up. One new thing, we're starting a movie podcast called It's Showtime, folks, where Podcastica hosts can cover whatever movies they feel like talking about, because I feel like it would be a good outlet for people who just want to do one-off movies. So we're starting off with Miracle on 34th Street, which will be in a couple weeks, you know, in time for Christmas. So it's a great time to rewatch that one. I actually haven't seen that in many years. Derek, you're invited to come and talk about a movie on there anytime you feel like it.
Thank you very much.
Next episode of this podcast will be our final seasonal wrap-up crossover with Chris and Jason of The Talking Dead.
Yay.
So there's still more Walking Dead talk left to do.
There is still more. One day we will finish, but not today.
That'll be out in a couple weeks. And I don't want to mention that we're getting into the holiday spirit ourselves, and we're covering a Christmas movie. Like I said, I thought it'd be fun if our episode covering the first episode of The Last of Us was 500. So we're sneaking a couple extra ones in. This is 496 that you're listening to right now. 497 will be the Talking Dead crossover. And then I was looking for a good Christmas horror movie to slot in there. A few people brought up Anna and the Apocalypse, which apparently is Scottish and has zombies and Christmas. And I just thought, wow, that's pretty much perfect for us. Right,
it's
up
like
our
they
alley.
Wrote it for you guys.
Lucy knows some of the people who worked on it. Is that right?
I think we are vaguely, there are some vague connections there. It has a kind of tragic backstory to it that's kind of beautiful. So yeah, we'll talk about it on the episode, but I'm really looking forward to doing it. I think it'll be great.
And that's going to be a crossover with Paik and Rima of the Run. Paik and Rima? No, that they do Strange Deed. Yes. Paik and Daphne of the Run for Your Lives podcast. And because of weird recording schedules for podcasts, we're actually recording that very soon, like Wednesday. So if you want to watch Anne and the Apocalypse and get your feedback in on time, you got to be quick. Like, watch it right after you hear me talking about it. It's available for rent on most streaming services, and it's free with commercials on Tubi, T-U-B-I. And I'll put a link to that in the show notes. I haven't seen it yet, but it looks like a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, most important, before we wrap, I would like to ask you, Derek, what do you have going on and where can people find it?
Well, you can find all my podcasts over on TV Podcast Industries. It's about 726 is my most recent count of podcasts that we've hit, which this year we've hit a lot of shows. We had 96 episodes this year, so two a week, all about TV and a lot of movies. Most recently, for the holiday season, we had a chat all about the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special, which just came out in Disney Plus.
I love that.
A bit of fun, isn't it? It's a short one. It's a 50-minute episode, which means we only talked for an hour and a half about it. We also talked about Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, quite recently as well, and just finished up our coverage of the DC TV show on HBO Max, Pennyworth Season 3, which most people don't know exists, but there you go.
Season 3?
Yep, there's a show for you to check out. That's an interesting one. It's filmed in the UK. All the cast are British. All the writers behind the show are British, and it doesn't have any UK release at all. It's only available on HBO in the US. So we had a couple of cast members contacting us to go, this is great. We actually can hear people in our accents talk about our show. So they've been tuning in. That's been great fun. And finally, as I mentioned, you can find everything on tvpodcastindustry.com. But one thing to mention, we will be back on Podcastica next year with Good Omens Season 2. Our last collaboration with Jason for Podcastica with TV Podcast Industries was Good Omens Season 1, which is 3 years ago.
Wow.
But if you don't know what Good Omens is, it's an excellent show. 6-episode season. Starring Michael Sheen, John Hamm, David Tennant, written by Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett, a British comedy show, really, and one of the best examples of what kind of shows are produced over here. I absolutely loved the first season. Really looking forward to the second one that's coming out next summer, and you'll see the Good Omens Season 2 Podcastica artwork up on the podcastica.com website. Click there, subscribe to that, and you can listen to the first season with the second season coming next year. There you go.
Excellent. And I'll put a link to TV Podcast Industries in the show notes for you guys. Mm-hmm. But yeah, definitely go and check out all their stuff. We also, a fun thing that we did fairly recently is we did a What If crossover.
That's right.
Where we kind of did What If We Had the Same Show or something like that. Anyway.
Yes. Where I was tortured with an episode about Comedy Thor by everybody else who enjoyed it, and I did not like it.
Too bad it wasn't a better one. Maybe we'll do another one of those. So that's a bunch of stuff coming up. Lastly, this episode is made possible by Patreon supporters like Tiffany Wunschel, who've pledged their support at patreon.com/JasonCabassi. So thank you so much, Tiffany. All right, everyone, that is our show.
Thanks for listening.
Don't get bit,
a Huva Ohioan.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it.